Welcome along to the D Word podcast, where we talk dementia. It's Dementia Action Week here in the UK, and I'm going to be looking at the Living Lab on Ageing and Dementia in this edition. A new initiative introduced to the northwest of the country, but one that has had a successful history in the Netherlands. To tell us all about it are Dr. Clarissa Giebel from the University of Liverpool and Professor Jan Hammers from Maastricht University. Well, it's a pleasure to have two guests on the D Word this week. It's a little unusual for us, so if I can welcome one guest we've spoken to before some time ago, Dr. Clarissa Giebel from University of Liverpool, and we're also joined by Professor Jan Hammers from Maastricht University in the Netherlands. So welcome to you both. It's a pleasure to have you as my guests here on the D Word. And we're going to be talking about the Living Lab in Ageing and Dementia, something which, as we'll find out, is relatively new to the UK. But if I can start with you, Jan, it's something that was introduced in the Netherlands, I understand, 25 years ago.
Yeah, that's correct. We started in 1998. I actually founded the Living Lab at that time. A collaboration between a nursing home and Maastricht University. And nowadays, that's 26 years later, we are consisting of a network organization which consisted of Maastricht University, a University of Applied Sciences, two vocational training institutes, and nine long-term care organizations providing long-term care, so professional home care, so care in the community, and in the other end of the continuum, the end-of-life care, and in between care and care homes, nursing homes, and sheltered living, and so on. So, well, really a long time ago, starting very small, and now you see it's quite sustainable ecosystem or network organization, actually.
Well, I think the obvious one that comes to mind, Clarissa, is, you've brought it to the UK now, 26 years later. That's a long time between, Jan kicking it off and now arriving in Liverpool.
Yeah, I think, let me just do the maths. I think I just entered my gymnasium, so high school, when Jan set it up. So it took some time to come over here as well. No, we're excited. I've been working with Hilda and Jan and other colleagues at Maastricht University for over 10 years now on different aspects of dementia care, long-term care, learning from them, learning how the Dutch care system works, which I always find fascinating, and trying to cross the boundaries with our learning across Europe. So then we thought recently, well, why not try and implement this in the Northwest Coast region, because all the research that we're doing is looking at inequalities and inequities in dementia care. And one barrier to receiving really good care for people living with dementia and their families that comes out repeatedly is a lack of social care workforce knowledge on what is dementia, how can we help people as best as possible. And we know it works really, really well in Jan's model in the south of the Netherlands. So, and we have a lot of interested social care organizations across the Northwest Coast that were looking for a new approach of how we can support the staff. So we've launched it on the 6th of March, and Jan and Hilda came over as well, which was fantastic. And we had lots of different organizations present that we hadn't met before, and now we're launched and now we're setting it up.
And Jan, I mean, tell us a little bit about it. Obviously, I assume that the Dutch care system led more to this type of approach. Am I right in saying that in terms of when you first kicked it off?
No, I don't think so. In that time, that wasn't the case, because I would like to also address the idea that Clarissa said, well, we can learn from the Dutch healthcare system. And I'm really happy to hear that. But on the other side, I always say we can learn from your system too. And I think that's the most important thing, that we can learn from each other. We are looking at the same challenges and so on. And when I started in 1998, actually, there was no research or knowledge development at all in long-term care for older persons, actually. At least in our system, most research was done at the university hospitals, actually, and in general practice probably, but not in that field. So it was really pioneering at that time, actually, and still we have to work hard to work on the relationships with all the different stakeholders and in the university and so on. As you can imagine, when we are talking here in Maastricht, a lot of people are talking about the Einstein telescope or all different types of very technological interventions. And we are focusing at care of older persons, at the daily lives of all the vulnerable people, actually. And that's less sexy than all the other stuff, but so important, actually. And that's our belief, and that was also the reason why we started. And so one main characteristic in our living lab model is the use of joint appointments. And actually, that means that senior researchers at the university for assistant professors or professors are working one day a week in the long-term care organization, so in the care homes. Not necessarily as a professional caregiver, but for instance, a doctor or a nurse or a psychologist, but as a person who is trying to create infrastructure for scientific research, for guiding curiosity, for guiding innovation in care, actually. And that's really, well, a quite new position, actually. And that's but that's a main characteristic, actually, in the living lab model. And what we are trying to do in this research is, via scientific research, trying to contribute to quality of care, quality of life of all the vulnerable people, and the quality of the work, actually. And secondly, second characteristic is interdisciplinarity. So we are not focusing at, for instance, medicine only or nursing only, or but all the different disciplines, the usual suspects in healthcare and medicine, but also in different fields, like the business sciences, the business schools, the data sciences, the educational sciences. And they are all involved in our network, aiming at contributing to knowledge development and to change in clinical practice and the daily lives of all of both persons.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, you'll find us talking health 24 hours a day now, with over 40 weekly shows on every aspect of health, available now on the website at www.ukhealthradio.com. This week on the podcast, our focus is the Living Lab on Ageing and Dementia, with my guest Dr. Clarissa Giebel from the University of Liverpool and Professor Jan Hammers from Maastricht University. So, it's a, you know, there's a lot of knowledge exchange going on there, isn't there, Clarissa, with one on the academic side learning about the care structure, and then obviously about those people involved in the care structure learning about what you want from the academic side?
Yeah, I think to put it into perspective, though, because I'm meeting with a lot of organisations at the moment, it's not necessarily what we want. It's more we want to give something back, at least from our perspective in our group, because we want to learn. We don't necessarily want to place any thoughts or ideas on them, but it's really like when we do co-production and host events with people living with dementia, their families, health and social care professionals, and consult them. We tend to not go into it with a preconceived idea. And I'm hoping we're trying to do this right now as well. We do not necessarily have research idea or something that we go into this infrastructure with. Our aim is just to build these collaborations and networks with staff and really to learn, and especially the junior members in our team. Some of them have not necessarily been working a lot in daycare centers or care homes. It's for them to understand what's behind the data they might see in their office. It's really to understand how does the system work. And then hopefully, as Jan was saying, it's an organic relationship and infrastructure that is being built jointly, staff, the managers, and at some point also the service users and clients hopefully will come up with ideas that might be relevant, sometimes just for one side, for one member. But sometimes it might be important to all the Living Lab members that they want to explore something and understand. And then it's us researchers giving the lab the tool. Okay, let's try and do some research together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting concept, isn't it? You know, yeah, and I talk to a lot of researchers. And I think probably we possibly covered this last time I spoke to Clarissa, but sometimes you tend to find that researchers through no fault of their own are in one little box over here, and kind of life is occurring in another box over here. And what you're trying to do is drag everybody together to learn from each other.
Exactly. And this is what I would like to add to what Clarissa said. What I think is of importance on our lab is that actually the agenda of our Living Lab, the agenda for topics that should be studied or and so on, is really set by all the persons themselves. So we have in our Living Lab, and we call it an older person advisory board, which is consisting of approximately 20 older persons, and especially representatives of persons who are living, instance, in care homes or receiving home care, professional home care. And they really advise on the future directions for research. They are really participating in the agenda setting for the topics and reflecting on the impact of the results. And I really remember during COVID, when the COVID pandemic was in the Netherlands, we did a lot of research focusing on the effects of the policy and the, for instance, the visitor ban at that time, and that led to a really quick opening, safe opening of the doors in Netherlands after 2 months, actually. So it was already June 2020 when doors were opened again. But it was based on the research we did in combination with the advice of the older persons representative board we have, actually, and the advice we gave to the minister, the Dutch Minister of Health. And it shows directly the impact you can create when you work together on the same topics, actually, because researchers can learn a lot of other people and staff members and so on. And on the other side, the reverse is true. So I think the strength is this combination of these different forces you can combine. Last thing I forgot to mention, I mentioned the linking pins. We call it the scientific linking pins. These are the researchers who are working in this care organization. Some years ago, we also introduced the practice-based linking pins, which are practitioners, could be nursing aides, nurses, doctors, and so on. They're also working one day a week in our Living Lab, and they're working together with the scientific linking pin in order to create this infrastructure. That's for something I forgot to say, and I thought, this is the moment to add this.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Jan, for that. I mean, Clarissa, early days, obviously, only been launched in March. What's the reaction been to people when, you want to come in, have a look? I probably made the mistake of saying, what do you want? But that possibly is a kind of natural human reaction when you see someone coming through the door. There's a whole concept of, well, we just actually want to hang around here and learn what's going on. Maybe a little alien to some people, perhaps.
Yeah, so we had quite a few attendees at the launch event, and people came up to us afterwards saying, our trust, our organization would love to be a part of it. So they already heard from Jan, from Hilde, and from myself and what we are envisioning this lab to be. So since the launch event, I followed up with 7 organizations already across the spectrum of different service types. So daycare, home care agencies, care homes, and they're all incredibly interested. But I think what makes them stand out as well is that the managers are very invested in creating innovation and support for their staff. So we have that top level buy-in already. So I've met with all of those 7 organizations. Next step will be to have a good chat with our team and see how this could fit within each organization. As Jan was saying, they're then called linking pins. And it's also the next step will be to host visits to those different sites and really see the settings, meet the staff, and then link people up individually, the researchers with the organizations. But so far, the expression of interest has been enormously positive, and people are saying we want something that's more engaging and supportive to staff and how we can learn more about how we can improve care delivery.
Yeah, I guess people are going to be a lot more welcoming if you come in with that approach as opposed to the tell people what to do approach, which is, you know, something that we always find difficult. I mean, Jan, one of the things I thought, world's ruled, unfortunately, by money. What's the kind of financial model of how this works in the Netherlands?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I think you're talking about the financial idea of creating this collaboration between science and the nursing homes, for instance, or the care homes. Eh? Because, when I'm telling the story of the living lab abroad, quite often people say, well, this is not possible in our country because nursing homes, they have no money for research or they have no money for... I always say it's the same in the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, nursing homes haven't that money either, but they have measures for trying to improve quality of care. They have measures to for training their staffing and so on. So, and what we are showing in the Living Lab by collaborating with different stakeholders, you can organize this actually. And by what we are doing is that the only thing, and that's what I'm always emphasizing, is that this collaboration can be done without external extra money. You can do this with just the measures you have in the different organizations. So the care organizations, the universities, the training institutes, and quite often a lot of things can be done, we call that in kind, by just saying, well, we have people, and the people we have in our healthcare system, they receive time to do this joint research, smaller projects. I'm not talking about real large projects, because large research projects are financed via external grants and so on. But the infrastructure of these linking pins, the practice-based linking pins, the scientific linking pins, that really can be managed without external money, actually. And what you then see is that also the care organizations perceive really a large return on investment, because they see now, by joining the forces, also by having more care organizations together, they can learn from each other, and they can there is no need to invest in a lot of projects because they are with so many, they can do it together actually, and that is even much easier actually. And that's the trick behind the model, because we have now seen that, and also in different countries this is possible. We have now the Living Lab using this model in Germany, 2 university cities with care homes. We have it in Austria. We have it in the UK. We have it in Leeds, and we have it now in Liverpool. So, and all the different systems show that it is possible, actually. But it's also about managing expectations, because there's always, when I say, when you start a living lab, start small. And because a lot of people think, hey, we have a lot of problems, and university together with us will solve all the problems. And that will not be the case, because we'll see that we have a lot of challenges, and there is, of course, a lot of knowledge, and we make improvements, but it are also small steps, actually. So, and it's managing expectations constantly. Even after 26 years in the Netherlands, We are managing expectations. We are working on trust, working on the relationships, and so on. And that's really key.
Yeah, you know, you've sold it to me, Anne, you know, just in hearing what you said there. I did read a statistic, which, again, I think going a little bit from what you said, Clarissa, it may take an average of up to 17 years before scientific knowledge is adopted in daily practice. So you do really have to manage those expectations based on that kind of statistic, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, but I think what this model does, because usually when we talk about that from bench to bedside, this statistics of like 17 years or more, we talk about developing, in the standard research practice, we talk about developing a concept, piloting it, doing a feasibility study, then hopefully getting money for a large randomized control trial, then working with policy and decision makers in getting this into clinical guidance, for example. That takes years. Whereas this, I think we as researchers need to take different levels and layers of generating impact. It's not always getting a lot of money to do a randomized control trial. It's about working with people at the front line. Obviously, we want to develop joint research ideas, but by just connecting, building those relationships that Jan has done for 26 years now, that's almost soft impact that can generate a lot more than if we apply for large money. And I think that's what Jan was getting at as well. We don't always need the big money. It's approaching impact on different levels and different approaches.
I think it's, you know, that's a really interesting point, Jan, and something you alluded to earlier in the conversation was about the Dutch Ministry of Health. And do you find on a political level people are looking for the big headlines and the big money, not this type of approach, which is just a partnership communication approach, as I see it? And as I think you said, use the words, it's not as sexy as some of these, you know, big research projects. How do you get that one across to the policymakers who are, you know, going to make a real difference?
Yeah, actually, by doing the same as I'm doing now, telling the story. So many years ago, already started with that, for instance, for the Dutch Ministry of Health. And like all other countries, quite often when it goes about care homes, and you see something in the media, it's most of the time it's because of poor or incidents or poor care and so on. What I have, and then the minister or the secretary of state says, well, here's 60 million euros and for improving, and then we go on to the next incident and so on. And what I always say is, what is the impact of all this extra money on the daily lives of older persons? What is the impact on their relatives? What's the impact on care professional caregivers? And my statement then is that it almost haven't any impact because people do not feel the difference actually of this money. And then I show the minister what we are doing in our ecosystem, trying to jointly work with all the different stakeholders and showing what the impact is on the daily lives. And that has convinced the minister in the Netherlands at least several years ago, and has given us external money for the infrastructure, for even strengthening the infrastructure at the university, and that is I think really a very interesting example of how you can convince politicians and actually also the ministry actually. That this type of work, collaborations work, really matters and really has impact, and that should be supported actually also in a financial way. And the reason why I'm telling is because I started just saying you can start a model without any external money, and that's really key. But when you are in a university, you have staff. You have tenured staff working at the university. And if you would like to elaborate the number of staff, that means that the other department, let's say the cardiology department in the hospital, has to decrease the number of staff. You can imagine this will never happen when it comes to care of older persons, for instance, or care for dementia and so on. So, and this was the reason why we tried to convince the ministry to give us external money to provide extra and strengthening the infrastructure at the universities. And we succeeded by that, actually. So in the Netherlands, in our system, in our model, we receive now for many years without an end date, this external money for infrastructure. So to enable having more scientific linking pins, so more people from the university can now work also in the care homes or in the vocational training institutes and so on. And secondly, I gave you the example of the COVID. When COVID appeared in March 2020, it was the ministry who called us actually and said, oh my gosh, we have no idea what's happening in the care homes. Please help us. Help us in creating more insight into the number of infections, the spread, the impact of the infections, but also about the impact of our policy actually. And we were also member of the daily or the weekly crisis team meetings of the ministry. So it shows you how we really have succeeded after all the years, by the way, because also that is something you have to build up, these relationships with the ministry, with health insurance companies and so on, because they think, hey, this is also win-win for each other, actually. And also the policy can really profit from the things we are doing in these living labs, actually.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you've got a story to tell or are working on a project you'd like more people to know about, UK Health Radio with a monthly worldwide audience of 1.4 million is the perfect place. Be great to hear from you. TDW Radio is on all the socials, or you can email us at tdwradio@gmail.com. This week's guests are Dr. Clarissa Giebel and Professor Jan Hammers. And I guess what comes out of that and what you said earlier, Clarissa, is you've got a number of stakeholders, and it's possibly even difficult to find out exactly who all those stakeholders are, because there's so many people involved in this.
What do you mean it's difficult to find out the stakeholders?
You were saying that, you know, you have a number of organisations, but even in this country, you have a number of small charities, we have a number of community organisations, we have, you know, you obviously have care organisations, and it's just getting all the, it's just putting that jigsaw together, isn't it, where all the bases fit.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing work in, I've been doing work in social care for a long time now. So I have some of those connections with the different organizations already. But what I find really lovely about the launch of the Living Lab is that organizations that I have not worked with before have approached me and us as a group because they really want to be part of this from the very beginning. They're really keen of being one of the founding members of the Living Lab. And yes, as you say, in our system, it is really important to learn a bit more about private and publicly funded organizations as well. But I think what's also important is there are very different sizes of organizations. Some care home organizations might have 10, 15, 20 care homes. There might also be an organization that just has one big daycare center that has 15 staff or something. But for me, it's really important that we have a good spread and diversity of those different types of organizations, because it's just as important to help the small ones and liaise with the small ones. They face different challenges than those huge organizations. There will be more managerial challenges, I'm sure. So we try and involve different types of organizations.
Well, I think it's a great initiative, and I mean, you know, just finish off. it must be nice for you to see something you kicked off 26 years ago, still going, developing, and people are looking and saying, hey, we think this is a good idea and we're going to take it on as Clarissa has.
Yeah, I'm yeah, really proud of that, actually. And because for us, there's also win-wins in this. And that is what I mentioned earlier. I think we can learn from each other really a lot, actually. And what we are also doing within the Living Labs abroad, we are also having visits and visiting each other so that people, these are also the different stakeholders that are care professionals, so nurses, but also a CEO, but also client representatives like family members who are joining us in the visits, for instance, to the nursing homes in the UK, but also in Germany and so on, and the reverse, so that people can learn from each other, can talk to peers, actually, can talk to each other and see how, yeah, that first of all, that we are facing the same challenges, but also how we address these, actually, and what can we learn from each other. And that's so stimulating. And so I'm so happy with the Liverpool initiative and all the other initiatives that are going on. So I hope we will we'll learn a lot from each other and in the near future.
Well, it's a great initiative. I look forward to seeing how it develops in this country, Clarissa, with great interest. And all I can say, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jan and Clarissa, for being my guests here on The D Word.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, yes.
Thanks to Clarissa and Jan, and I'm sure once it's established, the Living Lab will make a big difference. Well, that's all we have time for on this episode. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk here on the D Word Podcast.